Midlands today on Midlands 103 with Tullamore Motors. The Renault Capture. Capture life. TullamoreMotors.ie. When people in the Midlands want to talk, they talk to Will Faulkner.
Good morning. It's a summer's day. The weather is spectacular and going to be for the best part of a week. So get outside, turn the radio up loud, have a great morning. And here's what's coming up today. If you're a student intending to study in Athlone, have you got accommodation sorted? Because we're told it is harder than it has ever been in history to find a house in the Athlone area. Water supplies in several locations across the Midlands are running low because we've only had about 70% of the normal rainfall for the time of year. On That's Life with Brian Cunningham, Martin King, the weatherman, he shall be with us in just under 2 hours' time. Plus Dr. D is here for Health Matters from 10:30. And if you've got a niggle or a quibble and you want to talk to her, 083 30 10 103 on text and WhatsApp. Best of all, pick up the phone. 0818 300 103 is the number. Now, on the front pages this morning, the beautiful picture on the Irish Times is of an elderly couple staring out at just this millipond, a totally calm sea in County Cork, Fountainstown Beach. And apart from them, there are only two other people there. It's very nice and not overcrowded. Imagine being on the Costas now. You'd have people on top of people. It's very, very difficult. Anyway, the main story, IDA and regulator clash over electricity. So the IDA, their job is to attract all of these big multinationals to Ireland, the Intels and the Googles and the big pharma companies. And the energy regulator, its job is to make sure we don't run out of power in the winter. And unfortunately, because we've turned off our peat-producing power stations and we've also got a lot of renewable wind on the grid, and when the wind slackens, suddenly there's a shortage, they cannot guarantee supply for everybody once we reach peak winter demand, when it is coldest and when we're trying to turn on the heaters. And the big consumer, of course, would be data centres. And we've loads of them in Ireland. We've tried to market ourselves as a destination for these guys, for cloud computing. And, well, there was a lack of planning. And we won't have capacity, extra capacity on the grid until 2023, the winter of 23. And then we're planning to add more in 26. So you can read more about this on the front of the Irish Times this morning. Irish Independent looks at your pension. If you decide, whatever age you may be, if you decide to retire at 66 or at 67. So what's being talked about is an incentive. You would get an extra 4% a year in your pension if you hang on the extra year before retiring. You think, hang on, 4% extra? Yeah, fair enough. I'll put in the extra year and work. Well, it'll take 2 decades to claw back the pension that you would have received in the year you were 66. And therefore, 2 out of 3 men will not live long enough to gain from deferring their retirement. Because if you retire at 67, you won't get the full value back until you're in your late 80s. Hate talking about pensions and accounts and mathematics. It's all a little bit head-wrecking at this hour of the morning. But the bottom line is, the number crunchers have looked at it. Retire at 66. Because tomorrow is a promise to nobody. And, well, that's just, unfortunately, what we have to consider. You know, are you going to have a long and a fruitful retirement, or will you be cut short in your prime? Anyway, bit of a diversion. Heatwave threatens supply with 60 areas at risk across the country. The Irish Independent looks at parts of the Midlands where rainfall has only been between 65 and 75% of normal for this year. It mentions Mullingar in particular, where Lough Ool is lower than would typically be the case in August, but not at any emergency level yet. And so in some parts of the country, Irish Water is preparing for nighttime restrictions, reduced pressure, and they're going to intensify their leak repair programmes, because always that's thrown back at them. And it was, well, it should be, so much water lost through leaky pipes, but they are trying to repair them as best they can. That's in the Irish Independent. Olivia Newton-John is pictured in most newspapers this morning, who you will best know for her role in Grease. But in the last 30 years, she has become a champion of cancer survival and of research and of trying to make the most of what is the most awful news anybody could receive. And she has received it several times in her life, starting 30 years ago. But again, in 2013, she received a second cancer diagnosis and kept that one quiet. In 2017, she revealed she had breast cancer. So she, unfortunately, after multiple treatments, succumbed to the disease yesterday. But her dream was that in Australia, where she is a native of, that they would embrace what happened in California some years ago and they would allow cancer patients the medicinal use of marijuana. And she was campaigning for that in her latter years. Many tributes have been made to Olivia Newton-John, perhaps most fittingly from John Travolta, who starred alongside her in Grease. And he wrote on Instagram, "My dearest Olivia, you made all of our lives so much better. Your impact was incredible. And I love you so much. We will see you down the road and we will be together again." Now, that's if Taiwan and China don't blow us all to kingdom come. The Irish Journal, the journal.ie rather, it talks about China launching its largest ever air and sea exercises around Taiwan. And this is in response to Nancy Pelosi, the US Speaker of the House, travelling there about 2 weeks ago. And Taiwan has said China is using its drills in a playbook to prepare for invasion. China's real intention is to alter the status quo in the Taiwan Strait and in the entire region. So this is very reminiscent of what happened in February when Russia was accused of wanting to invade Ukraine. Russia denied that. China's denying this. Let's just hope the two scenarios don't play out exactly the same. Now, Ryan Giggs is in court again today, having made his appearance yesterday to deny charges of physical assault and assault causing actual bodily harm against his former partner, Kate Greville. But the court heard of emails that he sent to her. "Please unblock me. All this blocking malarkey is poo. Promise no more naked pickies." He also accused her of telling lies, lies, lies. Only an evil, horrible see you next Tuesday does that. And he is charged with assaulting her younger sister as well. This came to an unsavoury end, their relationship, on the 1st of November 2020. They were apparently grappling on the floor, and he's accused of deliberately elbowing her sister, Emma Greville. For the record, he pleads not guilty. His defence said that Mr. Giggs fully accepts his behaviour on a moral level was far from perfect and that he didn't always handle their arguments in the best possible way, but he denies coercive and controlling behaviour or physical assault, that these allegations are distortion, exaggeration and lies. We'll see what the court decides when the case concludes. Now, given the fine weather, it is ample time to go outside, to sit back, to relax, to let the muscles loosen up, to enjoy all the sensuous pleasures that the sun can bring. And Stella O'Malley, who is a psychotherapist, she's a mental health professional, she's giving you a prescription to do just that. Drop everything and go out and enjoy the sun today. she writes in the Irish Independent. The sun is life-giving. We wouldn't even exist if it wasn't for the sun. And when our skin absorbs sunlight, we produce vitamin D, which in turn triggers serotonin, a neurotransmitter that elevates mood. And she says, there's no need to go out and get sunburned or get tanned. Even 20 minutes of exposure is enough to produce this vital vitamin D. So she goes into the science of it in the Irish Independent, if you're interested. Two more stories very quickly. You think they're bad in RTE? Listen to this. The German equivalent of RTE is ARD. And the boss there has stepped down after spending €650,000 refurbishing her office, putting Italian parquet flooring down and two massage chairs. She was riding around in a limousine worth €145,000. She's accused of giving lucrative consultancy contracts to her husband. And naturally enough, the German people are saying, why are we paying TV license? Well, I can tell you this much. Upstairs in the office at Midlands 103, there's a dodgy chair with a broken caster. It's been there the last 6 months and it'll be there in 6 months' time. Now, finally, where does your chipper buy his or her spuds? Because in Britain, the farmers enjoy exporting 72,000 tons of spuds to Ireland every year. And you begin to think, hang on, why are we giving them our business? And one way this may change, in Britain, because of the heat wave over the last couple of weeks, the potato crop has been destroyed. And so now farmers here are asking chippers to please finally give your business to Irish producers. The chairman of the IFA Potato Committee is a chap from Wexford, Sean Ryan. He says Irish chippers should be using Irish potatoes and they should probably be advertising that they are using Irish potatoes or not, as the case may be. Call me naive, I would have assumed in Ireland of all countries you would not import potatoes. You would have enough supply in your local area to run a chipper. But seemingly not. Now, if you're a chipper and you want to dispute that and you say, hey, we only buy local, great. Let's advertise it. 083 30 10 103 on text and on WhatsApp. If you're a student searching for accommodation, particularly in Athlone, but just about anywhere, I'd love to know how difficult it is this year because we're hearing that there is nowhere to be found in the wider Athlone area. Is it the same in Carlow? Is it much the same in Dublin? What's been your experience so far and how helpful are the various student unions that you may be dealing with? Now, at the Technological University of the Shannon, the students' union is appealing to university staff, as well as members of the public, to offer rooms in their home. And the newly appointed students' union president, Niall Nocton, has been telling Midlands 103's Ellen Butler that the union is there to support anybody who is struggling to find somewhere to stay.
So I suppose over the last number of years, we have seen a complete shift in dynamic and in the student accommodation sector. So, you know, we have seen certain things arise in terms of factors that have led to a low provision of student accommodation. You know, we've seen rent inflation, we've seen accommodation providers selling up and putting their houses on the market. We've seen, you know, other tenant cohorts, such as refugees, taking up student accommodation within the last couple of months as well, which we warmly, warmly welcome. But, however, this is what has led to what we call now the worst student accommodation crisis that we have seen so far.
Okay, and Athlone is by no means kind of has escaped that at all.
Not at all. I think, you know, the accommodation situation in Athlone in particular, we have seen multiple student villages and complexes take in other tenant cohorts such as refugees, as I said, and that, you know, has left a complete lack of student accommodation there as a provision for a student for the academic year 2022-2023.
I know we were speaking to yourselves maybe last year, even the year before, and in the midst of COVID, a lot of people who maybe would have offered rooms in their homes for digs decided not to. In lockdown and that kind of thing, have they come back now, or have you seen any change in that area?
Yeah, like we've in recent weeks we have taken a lot of you know, concrete actions, both within the Students' Union and with the executive management of the college, and they have been very proactive in that aspect. And what we've been doing is internal calls with our staff and our lecturers to see have they rooms to provide there for students. And we've also seen it as well, we're doing a kind of a community call as well. We're sending out a distribution of flyers now within the coming weeks to try and get homeowners to share rooms to the students of Athlone and within our different regions of Tooth. And the response has been very, very good in that aspect. You know, we have seen a lot of accommodation providers that would have provided in previous years, and ultimately, you know, with COVID and everything being a factor, that have stopped all that kind of provision, you know, due to health and safety. But we have seen a lot of them have come back. We have seen a lot of returning landlords that are opting for that option again of providing accommodation rooms for students, which is brilliant to see. But, you know, like this is only kind of a short-term solution or, you know, a temporary solution. We need a more permanent solution. We need more concrete actions as well, I suppose, from the government in particular.
And what would you be looking for, Niall? Is it just literally more units, more accommodation?
Yeah, well, I suppose the main thing what we need to see is we need purpose-built student accommodation to start being built. You know, we have the capacity now to borrow there. The university has been given confirmation from the Borrowing Framework. You know, there has been that amendment from the Borrowing Framework Act. We have the capacity to borrow. We need to start, you know, developing plans, getting plans in place, and ensuring that student accommodation is on the horizon. You know, now with the university status, I think now more than ever, it's so vitally important. And with the accommodation crisis on top of that, we do need student accommodation to be built. You know, but we ultimately, I think the provision of student accommodation has just worsened and worsened over the years. You know, like I said, with all those different factors in place, it's just making the situation worse as the years go on. So we do need action now.
Okay, and just finally, Niall, for any students out there listening or parents indeed, have you any advice for them?
Yeah, I think just reach out, get support. Make sure you're getting in contact with your local students' unions. You know, get in contact with us here in Students' Union. We can offer support and guidance in any way, shape or form. You know, we have a specific email there, accommodation@ait.ie, or you can give us a call on 09046468067, and we'll do our best to try and accommodate you and get back to you. You know, we are getting some daily landlords getting in contact with us with some rooms to provide. So, you know, whatever we can do, we'll try our best to do that. But just making sure the students and parents are reaching out, they are getting in contact, and just making sure that they're mindful that they're not alone in this situation, because it can be a very distressing time, and that's the last thing we want to try and minimise, is that stress.
So just to reiterate, if you have a room in the Athlone area, maybe you have an apartment, maybe you have other property that you wish to let, the Students' Union would be very, very keen to talk with you. And that was its newly elected president, Niall Nocton, speaking with Midlands 103's Ellen Butler. Now, staying with property, the number of termination notices received by the Residential Tenancies Board in the first half of this year was up 58% compared with the latter half of 2021. So what's driving this? Pat Davitt is the chief executive of the Institute of Professional Auctioneers and Valuers. He's based in County Westmeath. Pat, good morning.
Morning, Will.
Why would termination notices be on the rise to such an extent?
Well, I think you and I have spoken about this, Will, many times on the programme. And obviously there are many, many landlords who are very unhappy with the way they can rent their properties and the way they can't be allowed to get market rent for their properties. So many landlords are under-renting their properties, basically. And if they want to sell them, the only way that they can actually get the full value of the property when they go to sell it is to sell it with vacant possession, because the lease that they have on the property at the moment, if it's only at 50% of the market value, it devalues their property by nearly 50%. So I know that sounds all sort of, you know, it sounds all very tricky, but in actual fact, it's quite simple if you work it out, that if you're renting an apartment at 1,000 euros a month, and another apartment is being rented beside you at 2,000 euros a month, which is the market rent, the government inside of the RPZs won't allow you to charge the market rent for it, because you were renting this apartment when the RPZs came in first.
Yes, RPZ so is a rent pressure zone.
Rent pressure zones, yeah.
Now, so would the differential be that much, though? You give the example of a 50% under rent. Surely a landlord isn't going to be that much out of kilter, are they?
Many of them are, many and much more. I know personally of apartments that are rented by landlords at 800 and 900 euros, and the rent for them at the moment is over 2,000. So this is the scenario that we're facing, and this is the problem. And how this came into being was that if a landlord, for instance, was renting an apartment to you and you were a good client, which I'm sure you would be, and you were paying your rent and you were doing everything that went with it, that landlord probably may not have risen your rent to keep it up to market rent, because he said, well, Will is paying me and I'm quite happy. And sure, when he leaves or whatever the case may be, I can put up the rent whenever I want up to market rent. So he was prepared to take the hit because he had a good client. So then you decide to leave the apartment, right, which the landlord was being good to you when you were there. He can't rent that apartment to the next person at any more than he was renting it to you. Now, somebody comes along into the marketplace with a new property and that rents the same type of two-bedroom apartment, we'll say, but it's a new property. They can get market rent for that property because they're bringing it into the market for the first time, and the market rent on that property could well be €2,000. So they can charge it, but the landlord is there for years and it was very good to you when you were a tenant, now is in a situation where his property is only rented at half of the market value. So when he goes to sell it with the tenant in it, it's sold not on market value, it's sold on investment value. And the investment value of that property, if the apartment was worth 400,000 with a tenancy in it at 1,000, the market value or the investment value of that property is only 200,000. So he can't sell it with the tenant in it. It's as simple as that. So he has to get the tenant out.
If he sells it, does the new owner get a reset? Do they start at market rent?
No, the new owner won't get a reset. The only way you can get a reset is to take the tenant out of the apartment for 2 years, and then it'll come back into the market as a new one. And hence you can get a reset and you can rent your property at the market rent. So these people, these landlords that we're speaking about, many, many, many of them are deciding that they can't get the market rent for the apartment, when a lot of these investment funds coming from outside of the country are actually coming in, buying up these new apartments and renting them at market rent. And what's even worse than all of that is that if I was your tenant landlord again and you were my tenant, I was more than likely paying up to 50% tax on the rent that I get from you. Whereas these guys come in and they set up companies, they rent their properties, they don't pay any tax, but their shareholders pay their tax in their own countries. But no tax, or very, very little tax is paid in Ireland. So that you have these guys at the top of the market and you have people like me at the bottom of the market, my landlord, and being good to you, and I can't change this rent because I'm in a rent pressure zone. But I can't equally bring it up, but I can't equally bring it down either, because if you bring it down, you can't bring it up again. So it's a catch-22 situation as to where you are. And they're one set of people that are getting out of the marketplace and they have no choice. You can't do anything. You have to get rid of the tenant, unfortunately. Like, many of these people have bought properties to rent. They're quite happy to rent them. They're quite happy to be landlords. And all they want to do is get paid the rent, fair rent, and move on with themselves. And that's all they want to do. But they can't do that. So they have no choice. And it's embarrassing for them to have to ask a tenant to leave, maybe after being there for many, many years. In many of these cases, agents have to go out and issue these documents to them and ask them to leave. And it's embarrassing all around. But the government basically have done nothing about it. And this scenario has gone on for years and years. And now the hens are coming home to roost and people are selling their apartments.
Now, the intent of the rent pressure zones was, where there were areas that rent was increasing sharply, this was to try and cool down the market a bit. That was the intent. So can that objective still be achieved, but solve the problem you've described for your members?
Well, it's very difficult, Will, to solve that problem when you have new buildings or properties that are out of the market for 2 years coming back into the market at whatever rent people want to charge. Like, you know, you can't do that. Like, people talk about the reason these properties were to come into the market, the new properties were to come into the market, was to boost the amount of rental properties that there are. But all that they're doing is they're coming in at the top of the market. The guys like me and smaller guys are that I'm describing, not me personally, but me, are at the bottom of the market. They're getting out. So what we're left with is all of these guys that are at the top of the market with much, much higher rents. So when equilibrium strikes, whenever that's going to be, the monthly rents that we speak about at the moment, we see the rents from the RPZ or from the RTB, and we see that every 3 months, they're the new rents that are being charged. But eventually, all of the rents will be up there because the guys at the bottom will be gone, and the only people that will be there are the new properties at the top.
Okay, so what do you propose as the solution?
Well, we have said to the government, why don't you, if you feel that that you can't increase the rent for these tenants that are paying lower rent, surely it's not the responsibility of the landlord towards these tenants. It's the responsibility of the government. So why don't you give each of the landlords involved, why don't you give them a tax credit for the amount of rent that they're losing so they can write it off against other tax or other incomes that they have? But the government, they don't want to change. I've written to the minister about this, and I've written to him a few times, but I've written to him about this particular situation and said to him, why don't you do this and it will solve the problem? And then if the landlord wants to sell his apartment, he can sell it with his tax credit, so his investment value is going to go back up to market value. But the government, they're turning a blind eye to this, and now these people are leaving in droves, and it really is droves at the moment. So, like, you know, it's not, if you, I don't want to take up too much of your time, Will, but if a perfect example is that if you and your family for years were growing apples, for instance, and you were growing Granny Smiths, and you, the government came along and they said to you, listen, Will, we're not going to allow you to charge any more than 50 cents for your apples. And you tagged along and you sent your 50 cents. And then they encouraged new people to come into the apple business and said to them, if you start selling apples, you can sell them at a euro or more, whatever. And you were sitting there like, what's going to happen? You and people like you are going to get out of the apple business, and you're going to only leave the ones at the top of the market that are getting their euro for their apples. And it's as simple as that. And that's what's happening. And it's not a big thing to understand, or it's not difficult to understand. And the government well understands it. But that's what's happening. And you can't blame those landlords, really. And another problem will...
Actually, to be honest, I'd probably turn my apples into cider, but that's a whole other story. Pat, we're out of time, unfortunately.
Okay, Will.
Appreciate you taking the call.
Thank you, Will.
Pat Davitt from the Institute of Professional Auctioneers and Valuers. Now, next, potatoes, which you need to make chips. And when you go to your local chipper... Are the potatoes local, or do they come from England? Still to come today, Irish Water says rainfall in the Midlands has only been 65 to 75% of normal levels. So some supplies are under pressure. Lough Ool is mentioned for Mullingar, for instance. Now, not critical pressure, not yet anyway. But we're in for, thankfully, another week of fine weather. And, well, there's a silver lining for most people, but for Irish Water it's causing some headaches. Chippers are being urged to buy homegrown spuds after British stocks got fried by a heatwave. The Irish Farmers Association says chippers import 72,000 tonnes of spuds from the UK every year. But the sweltering temperatures across the pond could end up hampering supplies there, which presents an opportunity for Irish potato farmers. Makes you wonder why in Ireland we're not already giving that chipper business to Irish potato farmers. Shane Howell is a former potato farmer in Killy in County Offaly. He runs Howell and Matthews Fruit and Veg Shop these days. Good morning, Shane.
Good morning, Will. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm intrigued. Former potato farmer. Why did you get out of the business?
Look, there's a lot of reasons why we got out of business. One was lack of labour. Second thing was market, decline in markets. And the chipper market would have been a huge benefit to us growing potatoes if we were able to access it. But they had this idea in their head that English potatoes are better, which is totally untrue. But look, that's what we're up against.
Forgive me. How do English potatoes and Irish potatoes differ?
There's a belief that the English potatoes, because of the drier climate, they grow better potatoes, but it's totally untrue. Now, we can grow Pipers and Marquees. They're the two chip potatoes. We can grow them equally as good as in England. And plus, there's other varieties that are every bit as good for chip potatoes, but I've tried numerous chippers in Tullamore and different places with potatoes over the years, and they just refuse to buy Irish potatoes.
Because they fear, what, the customer will notice the difference?
Well, that's what they're saying now. A guy, I'm very grave up the country in Meath, a big grower, he grew a lot of Pipers 1 year, and he was trying to get into the chipper market, and he put them into English bags, and they went out perfectly. I know it's the wrong thing to do, I won't mention names, but he put them in English bags, and he had no complaints. They were very happy with it, they wanted more of them.
Right, he just did that as an experiment.
He did it as an experiment, yeah. He didn't do it now full-time. He did it as an experiment just to see what the nose was the difference, because he was buying in English potatoes as well. And he just put his own in English bags just to see what the nose was the difference. And there was absolutely no difference.
Well, recently I was reading the story of Ray Coyle, who at one stage owned Tato Crisps, and he happened to start out as a potato farmer in Meath. And he was very much of the opinion, even back in the 1980s, that potato farming on its own was not going to earn him a living. And that's why he set up Largo Foods, and look, the rest is history in Tato Park and so on and so forth. But where I'm leading with this is, if the Irish potato is good enough for chip manufacturers, as in potato chips, crisps, why would it be any different in a chipper?
But they have this idea that they're cooking them at high temperatures and that the potato is going brown, which, to be fair, they probably could regulate the temperatures. There's growers in the north of Ireland, I know, because I do business up there, and one grower in particular told me he sells 3 tons a week of rooster potatoes to local chippers, and they're very happy with the quality. And we grow, predominantly the roosters is the most popular potato in Ireland. So there's no reason why they can't do it over the border, why we can't do it this side of the border. I think it's just mentality. We'll have to try and change your mentality. And sometimes price changes mentality with people.
Well, we're going to have to do an experiment. And maybe there's a chippers listening and they'll play along with this. Let's get a bag of Irish potatoes, pop them in and see what happens and do a taste test. And do they go brown or is there some discernible difference? But anyway, leaving that to one side, where then would most Irish potatoes go, if not to chippers, if not to crisp manufacturers? Is it just to the domestic customer?
Well, the domestic customer buys a lot of the potatoes, and then a lot of them goes to processing plants, which goes for hotels and goes for restaurants and so forth. We also export a certain amount of potatoes to Europe as well. But it's a bit surreal that we have a really good climate for potatoes here. We can grow the best quality potatoes, and then I've no problem with buying English products or selling things in England, but I think we should be trying to use as much of our own grown product as possible. And we have our climate in the southeast is very warm, so if it's a thing about temperature, there's no problem why we can't grow them down the southeast.
Mm. So how's the new venture going anyway? You've moved into the fruit and veg business.
Well, we're at the fruit and veg for a good few years. We have the Howler Matches, which is actually the only fruit and veg shop in Tullamore at the moment. We're at that. Now, I have other things. I'm farming as well. I'm growing a lot of corn, so I'm at that as well. So it's not just the fruit and veg shop. But that's the potato has just got to the stage that it wasn't viable, and we just had to pull out of it. It was either stay ahead and go bust or change our practice, which we have done.
Well, I'm glad you found success. Sorry to hear the potato farming didn't work out. Grateful for your time, Shane. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks a million, Will. Okay, take care.
Shane Howell, who was a potato farmer until very recently in Killy in County Offaly. These days you'll find him at Howell and Matthews Fruit and Veg Shop in Tullamore. 083 30 10 103 on text and WhatsApp. Well, I have a property for rent, and due to the regulations, I receive €1,200 per month when the rent in the area is €2,250 a month. Gosh, so that is just about half of the market rent. And on top of that, the person says they're also paying a mortgage, and they're paying tax on their rental income. So the bills have to be taken out of that as well. Will, good morning. Just a thought, listening to the tribute yesterday to Aisling Murphy. If she was still alive, she would have been in Mullingar last week, immersed in all of the music that she loved. And she, unfortunately, will never be at the FLA again, but she will always be remembered at it. Yes, indeed. And thank you for that message. That's from Gerard. Well, talking about potatoes, well, we imported £80 million worth of spuds in 1980 and £100 million in vegetables. And yet we grow so many here, it doesn't make sense, says Pat. And another listener says, I wonder, will we have room to grow avocados? Will, spuds have been imported for years. The British even raised the price for seeds to sell to this country. We import potatoes from several different countries. Wait and see what happens when the drought eventually extends from mainland Europe through to the UK and into Ireland. when we will be the most logical agricultural garden on the planet. That's from Mark in County Leash. Good morning. Hope you're in good form today. Lots to get through, including Dr. D from 10:30. And if you'd like to talk to her, please do give me a call on 0818 300 103. Martin King and Jenny McCarthy are Brian Cunningham's guests on That's Life after 11. And Jenny looks back on what has been a torrid year with radiotherapy, with chemotherapy, but she's out the far side of it. And it's a powerful interview from 11 to 12. And Olivia Newton-John, unfortunately, not winning her battle with cancer in the end, but she fought hard and she campaigned for 30 years and has achieved so much good in the world. She'll still be very much fondly remembered for Greece, and we'll be talking about her from 10:20. Now, it's another sunny day across the Midlands. Temperatures expected to hit 25 degrees this afternoon. Going to be in the neighbourhood of 30 degrees by the weekend, and all fairly dry conditions, which is good news if you're a sun worshipper. Not so good if you're trying to manage water supplies across the Midlands. That's John Gavin's job. He's an engineer with Irish Water. John, good morning.
Good morning, William. Good morning to your listeners.
What is the state of supply locally at the moment?
The state of supply at the moment is relatively stable across most supplies. There are, however, a couple of them that are looking like we're in a little bit of trouble in the Swan supply in South Leash, where we're currently tankering water into the reservoir to maintain supply to customers. Every summer, the demand goes up on the supply, and it outstrips the amount of water that we can produce in the water treatment plant. So this year, we're supplementing the supply by tankering water into the reservoir.
And is there a long-term cure in the form of a larger plant, an upgrade, or is there a plan for that?
There certainly are plans, but they're connected to the water supply project to Dublin, which would mean that we can provide water to other areas in Leash from the Limerick to Dublin scheme, and then we can divert water supplies over towards the Swan. So
right, so it's not going to be next year or the year after, even probably by the time that's fixed.
Regrettably not. It's every year, as I said, the demand goes up because there's increased demand from customers, agricultural customers and other consumers as well.
The Swan aside, are there other supplies in the Midlands that are requiring intervention?
We don't have any others that are requiring intervention at the moment, but we are watching a number of supplies. There's a number in Offaly, in Moneygall and Duncairn in South Offaly, and Mount Bolas are the ones we're particularly watching. In Westmeath, the Mullingar supply, which supplies 50,000 customers between Kinnegad and Moat and up to Rathdone, that's under review every year. Now, thankfully, the lake level is falling, but it's currently reasonably okay. So we're watching that all throughout the summer. The key point about the water supplies in the Midlands, as most of them are groundwater fed, so they're from wells or from spring-fed lakes. So it's actually later in the year that we get into September and early October that these sources are at their lowest. In the past we've had issues in Port Leash, and luckily enough this year Port Leash is not as bad as it was in previous years, but water levels are still dropping. So we're asking the public to conserve water as much as possible and think about how they use water in all of their daily activities. So think about using, if you want to go out and use the hose pipe, think about whether there's other water that you use that you can reuse. So in my own house, we use a washing up bowl, and we reuse the water from the washing up bowl to water flowers around the house, little bits and pieces like that.
Mm. So we hear when it comes to electricity supplies that businesses are the big guzzlers. Is it much the same with water, or is it domestic?
Most of the water that we supply are to domestic customers. Well, we have various schemes have different pressures on them. So some of the smaller schemes may have large non-domestic users on them, and they vary from scheme to scheme, but in general about two-thirds of the water that we produce goes into domestic use and about a third into non-domestic use.
So for businesses, is there anything they can do or are required to do to conserve?
Well, I would advise all businesses to maintain about 24-hour storage. So if there's some businesses that are water dependent, they could be in the food industry, or in the pharmaceutical industry, if they have their own reservoir of water, processed water on, you know, available, any outages that may happen, they're almost all under 24 hours, but they should be able to buffer their supplies. But I'd encourage all businesses and all house owners as well to ensure that all leaks and all on their properties are fixed. So look for leaks on your property or look for leaks on your premises and make sure that there's no water being wasted.
Now, with the week ahead being largely dry, are you concerned that you may end up before that traditional time of September, October, having to consider restrictions?
We would be looking at the situation on each of the water supply zones in on their own merit. So the ones that we're most concerned about are the three supplies in Offaly that I mentioned, Moneygall, Duncarron and Mount Bolas. They're the three supplies that we're most concerned about and they're watching closely.
All right, we'll keep in touch. John, appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thanks. Morning to your listeners.
That's John Gavin. He's an engineer with Irish Water. Next, Olivia Newton-John, dead at the age of 73, God love her. She's somebody who battled cancer for 30 years. It came back again in 2013 and she kept that diagnosis to herself until about 5 years ago, going public. And she has campaigned on many fronts over the course of her life to try and secure better treatment or different treatments for people in a similar situation. She's also, of course, very well known for Grease and that iconic relationship with John Travolta, who paid tribute to her on Instagram last night. I'll take you through some of the kind comments in just a few moments. 1978, Olivia Newton-John, John Travolta, from Grease. You're the one that I want. In 1978, it was released and knocked The Sound of Music off the top spot as the biggest selling musical in American history. It is a movie that Olivia Newton-John initially didn't want to appear in. She was concerned that she was too old to play the part of a teenager. She was 29 at the time. And some 5 years older than John Travolta. Rest in peace to Olivia Newton-John, says Jackie. A very talented lady. I could watch Grease over and over and over. And it is a movie that never gets tired. Well, let's listen back.
Danny?
That's my name. Don't wear it out.
What's with you?
What's the matter with me, baby? What's the matter with you?
Yeah. What happened to the Danny Zuko I met at the beach?
They had brought up Linda Ronstadt. They'd brought up Murray Osman. And I said, they're wonderful. I said, but every guy in the world wants Olivia Newton-John as their, oh, their girlfriend.
Right.
And I knew that because I wanted that. I felt the same way. No. Okay. And every girl wants to be like her. And I said, if you don't see this, you guys are nuts. Because there was only one person in the world that was Sandy, and that was Olivia Newton-John. This image, right? I got this.
Well, that's why I'm so glad that Tom's such a simple person.
Simple is right. Too bad his brains are in his biceps.
Jealous, are you?
No, that's Olivia Newton-John as Sandy. And a text here, by the way, recommends Olivia Newton-John in A Few Best Men. Came out about 10 years ago. She is hilarious, and may she enhance the stars, says Mark. Another text says, Olivia Newton-John starred in A Christmas Romance, and it was a most beautiful movie. But staying with Greece, it has been performed goodness knows how many times by schools in the Midlands and at theatres. And let's go to the Dunamase Arts Centre now, where Michelle DeForge is the director. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning. Very sad news this morning.
Isn't it just? Isn't it just? But she was so iconic in that role of Sandy. It's nearly hard to imagine anybody else performing it.
Yeah, but at the same time, so many musical societies across Ireland and internationally have made it their own and done wonderful productions. Our own brilliant Portlaoise Musical Society brought it to the Dunamase stage in 2013 and absolutely raised the roof with the rock and roll musical. It was just, it's such great music. So many of the audience members know the songs. They're so fun and so popular. But Gráinne Donoghue embodied the role of Sandy absolutely brilliantly opposite Slice Carroll as Danny. And they just had so much fun. It's one of those musicals where you watch them perform on stage and you know the cast are having a ball because it's such an uplifting, upbeat, fun musical. And even, as you were saying, Olivia Newton-John's own worries about being older and playing a teenager, it's a chance for grown-ups, I think, to have a little throwback to their teen years and have a lot of fun with the high school musical that it is, you know.
Why do you think it endures so well, given that it's nearly 45 years since they filmed it?
Yeah, I think it's one of those movies that just captured really beautifully great performances from Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta, and everyone just suspends disbelief at them being whatever age they were when they made the movie and forgives them that and the rest of the cast, and just really enjoys the fantastic music and dance numbers. Fantastic dance numbers, a really great opportunity for musical societies, choreography as well, and it's got great big chorus numbers as well, which a lot of musicals don't have, so it's great for musical societies to perform because everyone gets their chance to shine. There's great comedy in it, there's some really sweet moments in it, there's some lovely ballads, and there's some absolutely roof-raising rock and roll numbers as well, which everyone enjoys.
Do you think it'll enjoy a revival?
I think it will, yeah. I think sometimes when anniversaries of a musical happens or something much sadder like this where a star passes away, sometimes the musicals kind of come back around in popularity and on the circuit again. So certainly, the Summer Lovin' and songs like that are karaoke classics. I think they're going to be sung even more now in the next short while, and people will pay tribute in that way or make them, you know, do more cover songs of those songs in amongst maybe concerts of music. And I think we will see the musical itself maybe come back to the stage, it's kind of coming back into people's consciousness sometimes when something like this happens. But it's always a popular one for performers and audiences alike.
Michelle, always great chatting with you. Thank you very much for taking the call.
Thank you so much.
Michelle DeForge from the Dunamase in Portlaoise. The sad news of Olivia Newton-John's death follows a lengthy battle with cancer. Now, it was May of 2017 when she announced that her breast cancer had returned. She discovered in 2013 that it had happened, and unfortunately it spread to her lower back. It had been misdiagnosed actually as sciatica at first, but it turned out to be the cancer having returned, and she fought it very bravely and campaigned as well. She was an advocate for the use of medicinal cannabis, which her daughter actually produces at a farm in Oregon. She herself lived in California at the time, and the laws there were quite liberal, and she campaigned in her native Australia, I always forget she's Australian, that they would too embrace a more liberal regime on medicinal cannabis. So she leaves many legacies, both in entertainment and in advocacy as well. If you're squeamish, be glad this is radio and not television, because there are photographs in front of me of spiders and of wasps and of bites and of inflammation and sores and... Ah, Dr. Deirdre Ford, what are you doing to me? Good morning.
Good morning, Will. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I suppose it is timely, being in the height of summer and we're out in the outdoors, so insect bites are a reality.
Yes, that's it. So I always try to do something that's kind of topical. So I suppose we're about to hit into a heat wave. So there's going to be lots of bugs around, especially with people eating ice cream and attracting all sorts of insects towards them. So I just want to go through the common ones well. So the wasps, anyway, they're the most common.
Yes.
We all know that. And you know what?
I have a seven-year-old who's he's just petrified. He has a phobia, I would go so far as to say, when it comes to wasps, even though he's never been stung by one.
And even though I've never been stung by a wasp, and I intend to keep it that way.
Right.
So you will, you know, it's going to be very, again, anything that's, you know, all of the sugary things that are around, the ice cream, the ice pops, all of that, you're having barbecues, wasps are all around, and you're likely to, you know, attract a lot of them. Be very careful when you're eating ice creams, just in case one happens to land on your ice cream and you end up being stung in the mouth, because that can happen.
And that could be a medical emergency if it was your tongue, for instance.
That's exactly, that could be a medical emergency. So wasps, anyway, they tend to, you know, it's not usually single. You might have one or two stings from the wasp, and the area is really, really red. We all know what they look like. Thankfully, I've never had to deal with one of myself. But the home remedy back in the day was always vinegar. Try and get the sting out with a little tweezers or that. Wash the area first anyway, but try and get the sting out with the tweezers and then put some vinegar on it. And that should alleviate the pain. And obviously then get something like Nurofen. Anything with ibuprofen in it has anti-inflammatory properties. You know, paracetamol if you haven't got Nurofen or that. And then you can get an antihistamine cream over the counter in the pharmacy. And this is sort of a standard treatment, mostly for a lot of bites, this sort of washing the area, removing the sting. But bees then are a little bit different, because bees tend to just have one sting. You can become allergic to a bee sting. And you, again, you've got to take that sting out if you can, and use something like bread soda. So you go the opposite direction. Mm. So bread soda for the bee sting. Now, people can develop reactions to wasps and bees. So it's very important to recognize that if you suddenly start to, you know, your lips start to swell or you're feeling unwell, you're developing an allergic reaction to the insect. So you probably need to go on steroids. But more, I suppose, further down the road, if you get stung again by, say, the bee or the wasp, and we know that you have had a substantial reaction to it, you are likely maybe the next time to have an anaphylactic reaction. So it's very important that you seek medical advice, go to a specialist. You may need to have an EpiPen administered for you, but my son, God help him, when he was only about 14, he was on a fishing expedition with one of his pals down by the river, and he fell into a nest of bees, and he was severely stung, developed a reaction. So now he carries an EpiPen, but I always tell him wherever he's going, especially during the summer months, always to carry in a little bit of a tin foil, 6 little steroid tablets. Mm. And this is what the consultant had recommended. Mm. Carry those little 6 steroid tablets in your pocket, in your, wherever is close to you. If you happen to get a sting, then you take those immediately. So that will give you some time.
God, Lum, I don't know if I'd get over that if it had happened to me. What age did you say he was? 14?
14, yeah, 14. He's now 26, but he has. He's terrified of the bees. And when he goes to any festival or any concert, he always has 2 EpiPens with him and his steroids.
Now, another serious one, although this may develop over the long term, a tick mm-hmm. bite.
Yes, tick bites. So tick bites, again, common during the summer months, usually spread by deer. You'll find them in sort of wooded areas. So people going on to festivals, you know, young people going to festivals, you could well come across a tick bite there. And the most common disease, I suppose, that we associate with a tick bite is Lyme's disease. And the bite is very, very easy to identify. We call it a target lesion. So, you know, when you're playing darts and you have this sort of target in front of you, you have a red center. And then you've got this big red center. Then you've got a white pale ring. And now you've got another ring, red ring around that. That's called a target lesion. And they're very, very easy to identify. And if you see a target lesion like that, someone go to your A&E or your out of hours, my doc or whatever, K doc, wherever you go to see somebody there, because you will need to start antibiotics ASAP rather than, you know, go down the road of the debilitating effects then of Lyme's disease further down the road.
And it can often be misdiagnosed later as well. It can take a long time to figure
it
out.
Can.
It was a tick bite way back when. So just pay attention.
Exactly.
This is the part now that's going to give many listeners the heebie-jeebies. Right. We're moving on to spider bites. And we'll talk, I suppose, about your generic, common, ordinary chap first.
The common spider is actually called the hobo spider. And that's the common household spider. So those, if you get bitten by one of these, it's not toxic or that.
Yeah, it's just going to be very uncomfortable. Funnel web now, or one of those nasties down under.
No. It's you know, people have that fear of spiders and phobias, and I've actually gotten over it myself too. So anyway, they're not going to cause you any problem if you do get bitten. Just do the usual, you know, wash it out and get some antihistamines just to get rid of the swelling.
But you've a photograph here of a black widow spider bite.
I do.
Are we likely to meet a black widow?
Well, anything is possible, Will. Never say never.
I've heard of the false widow being in Ireland, not the black widow.
But yeah, the false widow. So the black widow spider, it's a black, plump, shiny spider. And it's not aggressive only if you decide to stand on it or crush it. But it is a serious bite in that it can cause, you know, muscle spasms in your arms and your legs and your back and weakness and chills and nausea. So that's a medical emergency. And the way you recognize this bite is that the bite is red, but the center of it has a white center. So that's the bite of a black widow spider.
Right. Let's move swiftly on, if you don't mind. Horseflies. I got sliced by one of these feckers last year. It's sore. They've got razor blades. Yeah.
Yeah. They have a long sting as well. And it's literally like that. And they're big flies. You know, they're big ones. Keep away from them. But it's like an acute burning, stabbing pain when you do actually get it. And like that, you treat it as you would treat any other stings that you come across.
All right, let's move on away from... Oh, God, you've scorpions here.
Yeah, why not?
Are there scorpions in Ireland?
No, there are not.
I was about to ask, what part of Athlone are you in?
Some people like to travel. Come across these things. You know, we are in the summer months, so, you know, never say never. Fly bites. You can get bitten by a fly.
Yeah, okay. Wait a minute. A fly?
Fly.
I've never been bitten by a fly.
No, neither have I. But you can get bitten by a fly. And I've shown you a photo there, Will, of sort of around the nape of the neck, around the hairline there. So flies. Now, if you go to another country, obviously the flies there are different too, but just take precaution. If you're going to another country and all of these insects are buzzing around the place, you're going to be bitten by one of them.
Mosquitoes are the ones we probably hate the most when we're abroad, but flies in Ireland, I presume none of them can give you a bite that does damage.
No issue with them at all.
Bit of irritation, that's about it.
Bit of irritation.
Now, come back to the reaction you mentioned earlier. Okay, anaphylaxis is the really serious one. But what might be a warning sign previously that you're developing this allergy?
Okay, so if you think that you have, you know, you've been bitten by a wasp or a bee and that's fine. But all of a sudden then you start to feel unwell, short of breath. You might feel a tingling sensation in your mouth. Your lips might start to swell or your tongue might start to swell. That's a medical emergency. That is anaphylaxis. And you need to be seen by somebody ASAP.
Okay, let's try and avoid being bitten at all. So if, for instance, you've got a particularly strong perfume or aftershave, as the case may be, might that put them off?
Yeah, you need to avoid having any of those strong perfumes.
All right, it attracts them then.
Yes. Yeah. So you need to avoid all of these. And I remember when I was in India and I spoke to an Indian colleague, doctor friend of mine, and she was really good. She told me exactly what to do. She said, do not wear any of those perfumes, lotions or anything like that. Make sure you are covered head to toe. Now, my ankles got bitten because they weren't fully covered. But citronella, any of those candles, you know, the citronella scent that you get as well, you can get them for diffusers or whatever. Use that as your perfume. So put it on your pulse points. You know, the way mum used to do perfume, put it on her pulse points in the morning. You put the citronella oil on your pulse points. That will spread and give off that citronella scent through your body. They won't come near you. And if you are, say, in a barbecue area or you're sitting outside, citronella candles, they won't come near you once that scent is around the place.
What about the clothes you wear?
So neutral clothes. Everything, you know, neutral. Nothing florally. You don't want anything that's going to try and attract any of these bugs.
You've got flowers represented on a dress, for instance, they're not going to distinguish between the real thing and that. They'll assume and they'll come at you.
That's it. Exactly.
And then, obviously, you mentioned the ice cream earlier, so keep the food and drinks covered. We've had a few questions from listeners, which we'll get back to in a moment, if you don't mind, Deirdre. Stay with us. Dr. Deirdre Ford from Kayla Medical in Athlone is here until 11.
Health Matters on Midlands 103 in association with Haven Pharmacy, Butler's Burr. For confidential pharmacy advice, let Lean Butler, third generation of the family, and his staff look after you and your family. Find Haven Pharmacy, Butler's Burr on social media. Expert care made personal. Midlands 103.
Annette says, Will, it's entirely possible to be bitten by the humble housefly. I have been bitten and it's not so nice a little pinch, she says. A few people have complained of bites while they were abroad, in particular from mosquitoes. Dr. Deirdre, would you talk a little bit about that? Because there are people who will be enjoying some sun, maybe in the Costas or even in more exotic locations.
Yeah, so mosquitoes, you know, you'll typically find them in stagnant water. So if you're in an area where there's anything holding stagnant water, you know, bird baths, stagnant sort of pools, puddles around the place, they're going to attract mosquitoes. And mosquito is nasty. It's a nasty bite. We also know that it carries disease like malaria, dengue fever, Lassa fever. So they're not nice. When you get bitten by, you know, if you're in an area, say you're abroad as well, anyway, you might be in some of these villas and you've got, you know, grasses around the area, wooded areas, you're definitely going to come across mosquitoes there. If you go to somewhere more, you know, towards Tunisia, that area, they always have the mosquito nets then up at nighttime. So, but you'll hear them, especially at nighttime, they'll buzz. It's a very distinct buzzing sound. They're very small, but you'll know they're in the room. So windows open at nighttime, you're probably going to attract them in there. So air conditioning is so important too.
One fact about mosquitoes that fascinated me, the men don't bite, but the women do.
The women do, yes. It's the male mosquitoes don't bite. It's the females that do, because they need the blood in their diet to reproduce.
Charming.
So that's why it's the females that actually bite you, not the males.
So if you can't completely prevent it, I mean, you can take all the advice you've mentioned and still get bitten. What do you do then?
So one of the, if you don't have any creams, lotions or potions or tablets or anything like that with you, a really good remedy is a cold tea bag that you have used. There is tannic acid in that, and put that on the bite and that will start to cool it down. Tannic acid is really, really good for bites of any sort. But in those mosquito bites, they can become very infected. They can become blistery. And if they're on your leg, your whole leg might be completely swollen. If the leg gets very hot, if you suddenly develop a temperature, you've got cellulitis and you need to be seen by somebody. It's the whole skin now has become inflamed and infected.
Yeah, caller says they're travelling to the States next week to see their son. They've tried all sorts of sprays to deter mosquitoes, but nothing works. You don't have a magic silver bullet, do you?
So as I said, the citronella, bring some of those oils with you if you can get them through duty free or the security. The tiny little, you'll get them over there. Citronella oil, and just use that as your pulse. That's your perfume. If you're out and about, they'll stay away from you then.
All right, let's move
on. And make sure you cover up, yes.
John has sent me a picture. He was bitten by a brown recluse spider in Spain. A nasty git, he says. And he shows me a picture of his hand after 2 hours. And there is a big, big lump. And not alone that, as I look, his fingers, everything is swollen.
Ooh,
it's like somebody just hit his hand with a mallet. You can imagine that, and the whole thing is just inflamed.
I assume that he was put on antibiotics, steroids, all the rest, because that's a really bad cellulitis that he has. I don't see the picture, but by your description, that's what he has.
Yeah, no, it's nasty. I hope you've recovered well, John. Let's move away from the insect bites. A few general queries that have come in. So, my wife suffers from migraine, says Paul, and often has to retire to a dark room for a couple of hours. She's 55 years of age, keeps a very healthy diet, but it's quite debilitating. Any advice?
Migraine is always interesting because it's usually, the usual onset is between the ages of 15 and 30. There's usually a family history, but if this is new onset migraine, this can be very much hormone related. When she gets her migraine, what she needs to do is to take ibuprofen. That's actually probably one of the best things to do. But talk to her doctor. Here I go again, possibly linked to her hormones and perimenopause. So if she got her hormones sorted out, assuming this is a new onset migraine in her years over the age of 40, that could be a solution, Will.
Okay, next caller says they frequently go to woods near Rathangan, and whatever is there, little flies, little midges, they leave horrible hive-like bites afterwards. And they're very, very itchy. So anything, yeah. I suppose, you've dealt with how to deter them, but maybe suppressing the itch, any advice around that?
Yeah, so you basically need antihistamines. All those tiny, tiny flies that you see around in Ireland, they're midgets. You know, you'll get them as soon as you start cutting grass, you're down by the river, you're going to be absolutely destroyed with them. So take some antihistamines and get an antihistamine cream. Not an awful lot you can do to prevent them.
Oh, God, here's one. Not for you, I suppose more a vet, but my dog has a habit of chewing wasps.
Oh, Jesus.
I've seen dogs snap at them, all right, but apparently this guy catches them.
Oh, I have seen my dog try to play with wasps as well, but I usually try and distract them rapidly without me getting stung as well.
Okay, next caller says, with the warm weather, I'm not sleeping especially well and I'm quite drained during the day. It's a bit of a vicious spiral. And with a heat wave on the way, is there anything that might knock me out naturally?
take a drowsy. I seem to be on antihistamines today. Take one of the nighttime antihistamines, the drowsy ones. That should actually help you. Now, knock you out naturally. I don't know, lavender, put lavender spray on your pillow. You need a good fan in that room, especially coming into this heat wave that we're about to embark on.
I recall when the kids were young and we were going on a flight, we were advised, unofficially, give them Phenergan to help them sleep. That is an antihistamine, isn't it? But it seems to have a sleep-inducing effect.
It has a sleep-inducing effect. And I remember, you know, even when my kids were small, if we were trying to get them into a sleeping pattern at nighttime, it was Phenergan at nighttime for maybe 2 weeks to get them into a sleeping pattern. Phenergan, yeah.
Here's a great question. How long should you take antihistamines for?
It depends. Excuse me, I need to cough.
Uh-oh, frog in the throat.
Sorry about that. Antihistamines, during the summer, we can give. There's one called Montelukast. It's called Singulair. And we give it at nighttime to treat or prevent, say, really bad hay fever in adults. Kids with asthma, they will always maybe be put on one of those during the summer months too, to stop them getting hay fever and potential asthmatic attacks. So with medication like that, yes, you can actually stay on it. Now, this would be under the supervision of a doctor, obviously.
But for a general antihistamine, somebody's allergic to hay fever, for instance, would you stay on it for a while?
You can take it for the summer.
You can take it for the summer.
Yeah, you can
take them
for the summer months, yeah.
By the way, Bula Bus, I heard your voice trying to crack on you there. You held it together. Well done, Deirdre. We'll let you go.
Thank you, Will. Thank you. Good morning.
Dr. Deirdre Ford from Kayla Medical in Athlone. And that brings the programme to a close this morning. It was produced, as always, by Sinead Hubble. And on the way, very powerful interview this morning. Brian Cunningham on That's Life. His guests are Martin King, very well known media personality, but also his wife, Jenny McCarthy. And Jenny is a popular photographer and she has had a long battle with cancer. Her year has been up and down and up and down, and she's had surgery. And indeed, 10 years ago, she had similar surgery as well. And thankfully, the news is good and it's going to be a lovely conversation by the end. And it's coming next. That's Life with Brian Cunningham, thanks to Kinnity Castle in County Offaly. Let's chat again tomorrow morning from 9.